Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Staff and Graf Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
In links or salad?
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
Here we are.
We're here. You have like a flower in the background. It's kind of cool. Honestly, it's because the orchid needed more sun.
It's to symbolize my innocence, you know, as a I'm a young child still flowering.
You're just at the budding of your I don't know where that was going. Things are going well.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know where to go from this. That was just a terrible. I don't know.
This is why what you I was do doing. This
is why
I
this is why I intro it. But yeah. Anyway, Rachel. Look, man, we spent a lot of time talking about the Arizona Coyotes.
Too much for our own good.
Way too much. And what's unfortunate is that we are now likely going to have to talk about, and not likely, we are going to have to talk about the team that they replaced, but then came back in the Winnipeg Jets, because that's just one big cycle of crap, really.
It's, yeah.
So
a big shit cycle.
You might as well just jump right into it here in that the Winnipeg Jets are having season ticket problems.
Okay.
That's been a big story in the NHL. Basically starting, I heard sort of like rumors about it at the start of the year. It was maybe getting dripped and dropped out there. Like, oh, the Jets, like their attendance is not great.
I don't understand why. They're like one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah. Then they started really winning. And so everyone was like, oh, okay, well, let's focus on the winning. But apparently that really hasn't improved a ton. And so Chris Johnson of The Athletic came out with a story basically that Gary Bettman is he's keeping an eye on Winnipeg.
I'm sure he's keeping an eye on Winnipeg. And as Matt Larkin, who wins Tweet of the Day, says, the NHL is, quote, monitoring the Jets. Meanwhile, the Coyotes could mail a ransom note to Gary Bettman telling them they kidnapped his puppy and he'd give them another year to figure things out. The thing is like, okay, they're struggling. They have 9,500 season tickets. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a 15,000-seat arena.
It's actually, it's a little less than that. Like, okay, it's, so yeah.
9,500 is still half decent. Couple of things. I think part of this is related, and I hate to do this on a hockey show, part of this is related to the fact that the cost of living in this country is utterly absurd, mm-hmm. and the reality of the situation is people do not have as much disposable income to do things like spend money on hockey tickets or concerts or whatever the case may be. And why is that? Because little things like gas, groceries, just the cost of
rent.
Obviously, we live in the most expensive city in North America.
But it doesn't go, it doesn't.
But that doesn't mean it's not expensive elsewhere.
It doesn't take away from the fact, too, that, like, even though, you know, it might be lower, like, in, I know that rents are lower in Winnipeg compared to in Toronto, but, like, that still doesn't mean that it hasn't risen.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that by the scale, it's affordable to live there. And so I think it's not a, it's not a commentary on the validity of the market, because Jets fans are some of the most passionate fans out there. But if you have to choose between paying your rent or feeding your children and season tickets to the Winnipeg Jets, you're not choosing season tickets to the Winnipeg Jets. And that's such an unfortunate thing, because I don't think you and I would ever make the argument that the Winnipeg Jets fan base is the problem here.
No.
It's very clearly the fact that there's not enough disposable income in this country right now, and it's become wholly unaffordable. And so I think the NHL saying we're monitoring the situation, well, that's great, but unless you're going to rock up at the government offices and start talking to them about making...
about inflation and all that, yeah.
Like, that might might not do anything.
So a big thing here is that A, the Jets have a lower, like they have the lowest capacity arena of anyone other than the Arizona Coyotes. And obviously the Arizona Coyotes play in a 5,000 seat arena. Obviously the Jets, I believe it's like 14 or like, I think it's 15,000 max that they can fit in the Canada Life Center. And in Toronto, for example, roughly 50% of the tickets that are sold to an average Leafs game, like home game, are through corporate partners, you know?
Yeah. Like my mom worked for a major computer company for a long time. Like she was a VP there and like they're, to kind of give you an idea, like their company owned a full blown suite,
yeah,
every single event. And in the Platinums, 10 rows up, they own 12 seats.
Yeah.
Like the company owns them.
It's not a lot of money.
People. And it's not even season tickets. It's PSLs, personal seat licenses.
Yes.
So it's like you have the first right of refusal to that seat for every single event in that building. All-Star, you get that. Concerts, you get that. Monster truck nonsense, you get that too. But also Leafs, Raptors, PWHL when they're there, like all that stuff. And so I wonder in Winnipeg if maybe they need to pivot. The other thing I think...
Well, it's tougher in Winnipeg.
Probably should get mentioned here is that the Winnipeg Jets are owned by two of the richest families in our nation. And I am not about to feel bad
for now,
either of them.
So why I brought up this percentage of corporate partners is that they have the lowest, like they have the second lowest capacity in the NHL. And so that's a lot. That basically means that they have to, they expect like 12 to 11,000 regular normal people to have the money to go on a weekday or on a weekend or after work or whatever. They may have kids, so to bring their kids to games.
You're depending on disposable income.
And it's tough. And like there just isn't that. Like I don't do luxury things because you want to save money. Like, you know, everyone's cutting back on everything. And that's a big deal. But you're right. Now, what I will say, though, is that the Winnipeg Jets, like they're owned by Mark Chipman and
David Thompson.
David
Thompson's Canada's richest man.
Yeah. So they're very, very rich. Now, the one thing you cannot accuse the Winnipeg Jets of not doing, though, is investing in their team.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying that, like, you can't say we're running out of money because we know you're not.
Now, because Chipman and Thompson, but Chipman's the majority owner. So he's the chairman, and he is calling up people who have let their season tickets lapse to ask them why, and then invite them to a game to potentially spark that interest again.
But you can't do it if you don't have
the exactly. Disposable.
They need to focus on corporate.
But he has put in the amount of money that they've done to renovate the Canada Life Center now is equal to the amount it took for them to build it at this point. That's what they said.
Oh, fuck.
And like, so that's a lot. But no, but I mean, like, that's a good thing. They're putting in money to like to restore this.
They're not depending on who.
They're not depending on public money. They're just doing it, which is great.
Well done, Jets.
Good for them. They
actually have a ton of respect for both Chipman and Thompson because, like, even though they have an abundance of wealth, I haven't heard either one of them go to the government and be like, I need your money.
Now, they did. The one thing that was pointed out in this, also, I was going to say they handed out a ton of money in contract extensions. It was $115, I believe, million dollars in total contract extensions to Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuck. They also extended Nino Niederreiter midseason. They went and they traded a first for Sean Monahan. So they're trying to improve the team and it's working, which is a big deal. But yeah, it's the one thing that is difficult when it comes to these kind of conversations, and it was brought up in this article by Chris Johnson, is that any talk of relocation is just a non-starter. And so what they did last year, as I remember, is that Mark Chipman, because basically what happened is they had some great season ticket sales, then COVID hit, and they've never recovered. It dropped off like crazy. They had like 11 straight years, basically, of sellouts. And then COVID hit. And then everything dropped off. And they just haven't been able to recover.
So something that tanked the economy impacted the Winnipeg.
Exactly.
Jets. Okay.
And so there was sort of a public statement of some sort by Mark Chipman that said, hey, man, like we need more people to come to games or else, you know, who knows? Like this might not be viable. And then so you bring up that sort of conversation to Jets fans. And that's like bringing up Vietnam to a Vietnam vet. Like it is.
Yeah, they don't do it.
They start hearing Fortunate Son and the helicopter blades going and they just go like, I'm back in surrounded by the Charlie. You know, there's Charlie everywhere. And it's just not good. And maybe that was a misstep on his part to evoke that, because that really did kind of sour people on it, to be like, is this guy trying to hold us hostage again? Like, this is ridiculous. So I get that. It's really tough, like you said, it's really tough to sell core partnerships in Winnipeg. Like it's tough just because of the way that arena is set up. And it is the smallest market. Like it's a passionate market, and
their fans are,
they're incredible. Like there's a reason why, yeah. There's a reason why when the Thrashers decided that they basically weren't going to exist anymore, that Winnipeg jumped the queue from Vegas, Seattle, Houston, Quebec, all these teams that were doing, putting in years of trying to break in here. Once, like, Chipman is a big reason why, but also all the fans and the market and the ability to sustain a hockey team like this, they jumped the queue to go back. But it's difficult when you don't have, when in an already gate driven league, you don't have sort of the safety net of the corporate sponsorships, of the PSLs, like you said, of sort of like guaranteed money.
Right, because
just leave it. It's fine. Just leave it.
Okay, so for anyone who is listening and not watching, mm-hmm. the last, what do we say, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah.
We've had jerseys hanging on the wall. We like to rotate them because it's like, yeah. It's kind of cool. The problem is the wall that's behind me is a concrete wall.
Yeah.
And like, no matter what I do, nothing sticks to the wall. And like, I've been hit in the head a solid 3 or 4 times by things falling off the wall. So I think I'm kind of at the point where I'm getting the drill out and I'm just going to start drilling. Because you, that's should. Where
who
I'm
cares,
at.
Man.
So, anyways, a jersey just fell and yeah. nearly whacked me in the head.
To be fair, though, it's not like a frame. It was just a cloth jersey.
But
so you
I
didn't...
do have a frame off of camera that is supposed to be in the background.
Would be, it would be nice to hang up. But, yeah.
But it also weighs 30 pounds and might break my neck if it fell.
Yeah, not good. But yeah, this is it's a touchy situation. But it goes to show, again, why. And I have some numbers here that I'd like to bring up. I know you don't like it.
15% of it being corporate sponsors. I think when you look at it, there you almost have to remove Toronto and Vancouver from the equation, because there is so much corporate money in those two cities that they're more American than they are Canadian in mm-hmm. the sense of like availability of corporate dollars. Whereas when you get to, there's even less corporate dollars in Montreal than there are in Toronto and Vancouver, and people aren't going to like that. But the reality of the situation is 50% of Canada's GDP, like nearly 50%, comes from Ontario, and a whack ton of that is Toronto, because we have Bay Street, we have everything in Toronto. And so if you look at it, not Toronto, like only Toronto, but the Toronto-Windsor corridor, if you look at all the automotive stuff, all the stuff that's actually in downtown Toronto, it accounts for a major portion of Canada's GDP, which is why all the corporate money's here. And so Winnipeg is kind of in a tough spot in the same way, like Ottawa, there's not a ton of Fed money that's going into the Sens, which is why that they are struggling as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if there's a conversation maybe to be had with the NHL about what is Ottawa doing that is made them somewhat sustainable versus what's Winnipeg doing? Because I don't think it's in the equation that Winnipeg is relocating. You're going to find a way to make it work, but you don't have the corporate dollars. Similar to Calgary and Edmonton, there aren't corporate dollars that exist like they do in Vancouver, Toronto, and even a little in Montreal as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's got to be some level of solution. So instead of monitoring it, maybe the NHL should actually like show up and go start to meet with the corporations
that are
in Winnipeg.
They are. That's what Gary Bettman's doing. Gary Good. Bettman is going to Winnipeg, I believe, this coming week. I think it was listed as Wednesday or something he's going, but anyway, he is going and he's talking to the corporate partners, and so that is a good thing that he's doing. But I want to bring up some comparison numbers here, in that it was sort of flouted about it and highly touted that the Arizona Coyotes, you know, the past four, this is per both the Coyotes like retweeted it and sort of added their own sort of thing.
Mike,
comes
we don't
to,
do numbers on this podcast.
No, we don't. but they added sort of their own spin on it as well. But this is Craig Morgan.
Okay.
All info per Coyotes. So it comes to the Coyotes.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, a giant grain of salt.
They've had 4 games in Mullet Arena this season that topped 1 million in gross ticket sales. Toronto, Boston, Edmonton, and an upcoming game against Chicago. Pittsburgh and first Chicago game topped 950,000. And by contrast, and this is just crazy to think about, by contrast, the Coyotes had 37 total games over 1 million in gross ticket sales in 18 seasons in Glendale. Now, the average gate for an NHL game, like for a home game, for any for a team, the average gate in the NHL is $2.5 million.
And do you know who helps raise that average a whack?
Well, Toronto Maple Leafs.
New York Rangers.
The New York Rangers.
Those are the big ones.
Even like the Montreal Canadiens sell at every game. And they have the highest capacity arena, I believe.
No, but I'm talking like
ticket prices and sales.
The Rangers and the Leafs are so expensive.
But like this is the average gate for an NHL game. Home game is $2.5 million. And here we are going to celebrate the Coyotes for topping $1
million. Now, is it...
Does this mean that the tickets are insanely expensive?
It is somewhat impressive that you can top $1 million in a 5,000-seat arena.
Like, it's also all people coming in. Like, I'm not sure if you've seen the crowds in these games.
I know, there's no student section anymore.
There's no student section. There's no Coyotes fan section.
The Leafs-Coyotes game was embarrassing. It was
even, did you watch or hear the reactions from the Edmonton Oilers game that they played?
Oh my God.
It was an Oilers home game or an Oilers home practice given the amount of fans that were there.
I had a friend who was at the Coyotes Leafs game when Matthew scored 50-51. Yeah. And this person said to me, it's the loudest the building has been
ever
all year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the loudest the building was when Matthew scored. Not when the Coyotes came back and tied the game. Not any of that. When Matthew scored. If your arena is louder for the away team than it is for the home team, you have a problem.
Yes. Well, this is basically what people thought it was going to be like in Vegas. What people thought was going to happen in Vegas was that the crowd was going to be filled with the majority of fans visiting Vegas to see their team or coming through to see their team. And then it would be like 40% or 30% actual local Vegas fans, where it's like literally the opposite.
So I have a couple friends who I met when we were out at the Cup final. So my friend who lives out there introduced me to like his group of friends, and I was sitting chatting, and they're all like, they grew up in and around the Vegas area. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I kind of want to ask them. I said, what is it that makes you a Golden Knights fan? And like, kind of, why is it that the city has really grasped onto Vegas and not made it sort of an away city sort of situation where away fans are invading, right? Mm-hmm. And a couple of them said, they're like, honestly, it's because this is the first time that a major pro sports league has truly believed in us and given us a team to call our own. So we've really latched on in the sense that, like, this is our team.
Yes.
And now the Raiders are there. But you have a bunch of Oakland fans that come, and you have, like, my dad lives in Toronto and he's a Raiders
fan. They didn't relocate this team. This is a team that was given to Vegas. Grassroots, you grow it from, you don't come in with an established brand.
Like the Athletics are going to do.
Like that, like, well, the Raiders, they were the Oakland Raiders forever. Now they're the Las Vegas Raiders. But like, this is, no team was the Golden Knights before.
Right. And so they've latched on. And I think you and I can both agree, like, when we were out there for the Cup final, albeit, yes, it was the Cup final, that atmosphere, that was
crazy.
One of the loudest arenas we'd ever been
in. It was crazy. It was unbelievable.
I remember saying to you, I have been at European soccer games that have been quieter than this.
My seat in the press box was shaking when they would score.
Oh, we thought the building was going to come down when Mark Stone scored.
Yeah. When Mark Stone scored that like 9-2 goal or whatever. Like, it was insane. And the building is gorgeous. Just the marketing partnerships are gorgeous.
Perfect.
Where it is, it's on the strip, like at the end of the strip, but on the strip, it couldn't be better.
I remember when they scored that shorthanded goal. Yeah. I was down visiting David Amber and Elliot Friedman on like their platform that they were doing. The building shook to the point where the three of us looked at each other and were like, this platform thing we're standing on right now is not stable. It might collapse.
Yeah, it's nuts. So
We hope the Jets will. Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, they're going to figure it out.
They're going to make a boatload in playoff revenue.
Yes. And they're not going. I think a big reason, too, is that, yes, COVID happened and it decimated everything, as we know. But also, the team wasn't good coming out of COVID. Like the team was,
they were bad.
The team was a bad sort of middle of the pack, like not bad enough where you can sell a tank, but not. And they also, they weren't likable. Like everything we always heard from this team was
always a problem.
There was always a problem. It was something to do with, you know, it was always some Mark Scheifele drama or some Blake Wheeler drama or, you know, some Patrick Laine drama. And then you bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois, and that was just a black cloud over everything for pretty much the entire time he was there. Now this team, they are likable. They're aggressive. They're fun. They're good.
They might have the most likable coach in the game.
Exactly. They have a coach that A is also super likable and B like could potentially win the Jack Adams this year. Like it is, they've either curbed or pruned every sort of bad branch on that was holding them back before. This is a team that the city can finally, they can really get behind again. So everything's going to be fine in Winnipeg, I think. But, and I know that it's the league's job to sort of monitor and take a proactive stance on things, but where was this? And we don't know. Look, we don't know at the end of the day, like maybe the league has been monitoring Arizona forever, but based on the amount of times and sort of extended deadlines and leeway, basically the amount of rope that they've given Arizona, I hope they give to other places.
Right. Now we will quickly discuss the fact that The Jets on the ice, fantastic. Off the ice, not so great right now. The Penguins on the ice right now, big problem.
They're huge open problem. For business. Huge problem.
And let's be super clear. This is Kyle Dubas' mess to clean up. It is not one he created.
No, but
No. He did not create this mess. He did not sign any of those contracts.
He signed some contracts that are not great, Rachel.
No, but he did not sign the contracts that are currently a problem.
So what would you say? I'm not blaming Dubas for this, but I don't think he goes blameless.
No.
But who do you think are the contracts that are a problem? Okay. Off the top of your head, who do you think are the biggest problem contracts in Pittsburgh right now?
Pretty much anybody with term in the bottom six is a giant problem.
Like here, I'll bring up their cap friendly.
I think Marcus Pettersson is not on a great contract. I think Tristan Jarry in the first year of his contract has been absolutely fantastic. Like,
but it's not helping. They still suck.
No, but it's. But what I'm saying is he's not the reason, so that's not a bad move by Dubas.
No, but
he's been a top five goalie in the league this year. Like, actually nuts. And so I look at this, and I mean, we're not going to spend too much time on the Penguins because on Monday, Jesse Marshall is going to join us. And we're going to do a real deep dive into the Penguins. So I think maybe don't even bother doing the cap friendly thing because we're going to do this Monday.
Yeah. But I real quick, though, like Riley Smith, for example, has not been he was good to start out, but he has not been a fit. That was a contract that Dubas acquired.
For a third round pick,
but still,
that's nothing. Yeah.
Hey, it wasn't nothing in our trade conversations that we had last episode.
Well, no, but episode. They won that trade. They got an NHL player out of it.
Okay. Ryan Graves has been a disaster.
That's a problem.
Other than Jarry, that was the biggest. And obviously, he didn't sign, but he acquired Carlson, who's been good.
Yeah, I was going to say, Carlson's
definitely not the problem. Yeah. But that was, but he acquired, or he signed he Ryan Graves. He really was. But when you look at the players that aren't really performing, it's like this team shouldn't be that bad. Now
it's everybody outside of the Hall of Famers, basically.
Signing Lars Eller for 2 years at 2.4.
He hasn't actually been too bad. I've been watching.
But could that go to something better? Yes. Like, yeah. So
but
it's,
let's do that. This is Monday.
Yes. Yeah. But basically what we're saying is the Pens are open for business. Everyone aside from the core. And although that's, I would say what's
that means Jake Gensel's getting traded.
Yes. But I would all, even though he's currently injured right now, but then again, friggin' Gustav Nyquist got traded while he was on LTIR. So yeah. Who cares? But as much as I would say is, what's the point of announcing that you're open for business if your core is not, it's like, this is does Dubas loves a strapping himself to four player cores. He loves it so much. And two, he loves saying you're open for business, except for the players that could actually get you something.
Okay, well, you can't trade any of them, so it doesn't matter.
I know, but why announce it then?
No, because you have to make clear that, because all anyone's going to do is call on Sidney Crosby. He's got to make clear that that's not happening. So I actually don't mind it, because you have to make clear to everybody, like, don't even pick up the phone if you're calling about 87, 71, man, 58, or 65, because it's not happening.
Crosby would be a real good av, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? He has a no move clause.
Yeah, but
he's not going anywhere.
He wouldn't go play with his buddy Nate.
No,
his buddy Nathan McKinnon.
He's been super clear about the fact that he doesn't want to play anywhere but Pittsburgh.
On that note, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a wagon.
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Six straight wins.
I wanted them to lose because I just wanted the takes.
The discourse. Yes.
I just wanted. Morgan Riley is the problem. My column.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I think we can say that he is. You know, the Leafs were. Look, to be fair, I think his. Look, give a big thanks to Ridly Greig. He's the guy who is responsible for this. This was a rallying point for the Leafs. They played like crap against a terrible Ottawa Senators team. That we're about to talk about. And, you know, Riley comes in, stands up for him, gets the book thrown at him completely unfairly. And now here we are. And they've rattled off six straight wins, one with Riley back in the fold. They have 16 goals in their last two games. They've looked really good with a insanely depleted lineup. A lot of it is due to the fact
that I actually liked Ryan Reeves' interview at first intermission because he, like with Mark Masters, he was saying, he was like, it's a rallying point because that guy got the book thrown at him for battling for the crest.
For protecting the crest, yes.
For protecting, and you know what? I think you and I have talked about this a lot. It's been talked about by Nick Kiprios and Jeff O'Neill, and rightfully so. Like, they're all right. There has not been enough I'm battling for the crest where it is concerned with the Leafs. And so for the Leafs to rally around the fact that their guy got suspended for doing exactly that, I think is a huge step forward for the team. Because it looked like Morgan Riley got the book thrown at him for basically protecting the crest, and the rest of them said, we're now going to start doing that as well. Like, even in scrums, I'm kind of noticing that there's a little bit more anger involved, I would say. Like, there's actual pride. That's a good word. There's pride now. And I don't think there was necessarily as much before. I never doubted Morgan Riley's pride.
Is there passion?
I think the passion has returned.
Cool.
The passion.
I think this can basically confirm or is the definitive confirmation that no, they should not sell at the deadline. They should buy.
I think that they should. I will say this. They have changed my mind.
Okay, good.
I don't think they should willy-nilly, though.
Well, like, no, I don't think any team should willy-nilly.
One big move, not four.
I don't think they were ever going to get one big
right-handed defenseman, basically. Like, you get Chris Tanev, but I'm still of the opinion.
I don't think that's a big move, even. Like, yeah, Chris Tanev's a big name, but, like, they're likely going to...
No, but that's what I'm talking. You get one of those moves. Like, you're not... I am still of the opinion you are not trading your first-round pick.
No.
I'm not changing that.
I don't think they want to, but they have some guys that could maybe move the needle or supplement sort of multiple seconds or something.
I think Sheldon Keefe deserves some credit here too because he's finally addressed.
He has unlocked that lineup.
Yeah. So finally, moving Tavares to the third line, having Domi play with Nylander, taking advantage of Domi's speed, has given the Leafs, and we're going to talk about this with the Sens, having three centers that can really play in their roles can really help a team in terms of being difficult to defend. And I think Sheldon Keefe has done a good job.
Absolutely.
Where he's got Bobby McMahon playing an elevated role and he's thriving. He's got John Tavares playing in a role that probably fits where his play has been this year. He's elevated Max Domi and that's really helped Max Domi. And then like that top line is just LOL. So I think you look at that. And then I don't think it should be overlooked that when he made the decision to put Brody back on his left side, Brody's looked like a completely different defenseman now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Liljegren has looked fantastic.
So it's really funny, and before we move on to our deep dive here, but the last thing I want to say is it's funny because the Leafs have a really good record with Riley out of the lineup. They're like, they're something like
19-2-1.
Exactly, like it's crazy. But I think a big reason behind that is because when Riley goes out, Liljegren gets promoted into the top four and gets played, you know, 20 minutes a night. And he really, like, he thrives.
I think part of it as well, like, I think you're completely right. And that is part of our star defenseman is not in the lineup. So all of us
need to come together
and step up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas I think Mike Johnson talked about it, where he was kind of like saying, basically, if Morgan's in the lineup, then everyone just kind of sits back because Morgan's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when Morgan's not in the lineup, oh shit, Like, I actually have to contribute now because he's not in the lineup. So if you could just, like, you know, I don't know, continue to do that.
You know how much I love Morgan Riley. You know how much we love on this podcast
Morgan Riley. This is a Morgan Riley.
We have, there's a signed Morgan Riley stick in frame right there. I don't think Morgan Riley is good enough for the Leafs defense to go, well, he's got it. Like, yeah, we don't like, have to do anything.
He's not Cale McCarr.
He's not Cale McCarr. He's not, you know, even.
But that's the mentality that it looks like they're playing with.
It's wrong. It's a wrong mentality.
Yes. And, bad.
But I also think that when Riley goes out, Liljegren gets a bump into the top four, and I think he looks a lot more comfortable there because he's actually relied on, and he plays, and he just plays the game more. And that's a big reason why, like, Liljegren has played his absolute best hockey in this six game or five game stretch before this, when Riley was gone, and he's played so well that they put Morgan Riley with William Lagesson just so they didn't have to break up the Liljegren Brody pair that was working so well.
So the reason I brought up Tanev is because I think if you can acquire Tanev and your D pairs Riley Tanev, Brody Liljegren, Benoit McCabe with Lagesson as your seventh,
phenomenal.
You are thrilled with that.
I think they I think that Ryan Reeves has actually played very well in his role during this stretch as well. Like, frankly, I think he's been fine. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just purely from
he's been fine. But when Kale Yarncroft comes back, if any of Robertson or McMahon's
never coming out, McMahon
come out of the lineup,
because we need to talk about Bobby. We need to talk about Bobby McMahon. Like, McMahon's not coming out. He's not.
They might not be able to re-sign him at this point.
They will. He's listen. At the end of the day, he's had a good like 10 game stretch.
That's what the agent loves, though.
The agent loves that, but. He was on waivers 2 months ago and got unclaimed. Okay.
Oh, I know, but so now he wouldn't pass through.
No, but that's because he's on like the heater of all heaters.
Yeah.
However, he's never coming out. But I really do think they need another.
Kale Yarncroft coming back. Kale Yarncroft's
a huge thing. I think if they went and they got if they could just basically repeat getting Noel Acciari or something onto that fourth line.
I think that's Kale Yarncroft. I think that's him coming back right now with how this lineup looks.
I want someone to replace. I think it's yeah, you know what? It's great.
Because then your fourth line, yeah. so your top line is Knies, Matthews, Marner. Untouched.
Yeah.
Your second line is Domi Nylander,
Bertuzzi.
Bertuzzi.
Untouched.
Your third line is McMahon, Robertson, Tavares, not getting touched. If your fourth line is Gregor, Kampf, Yarncroft, I'm totally good with that.
I think they need an upgrade over Gregor. Gregor has been really bad in the the first 20 games.
Where, like, you need to give up.
No, you don't need to give up. Assets. You don't need to give up a ton. But I think that if they were to go out,
I'd rather
out,
see them give up assets
for a defense. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think if they were to go out and get like another sort of Noel Acciari type, like a guy who was
See, if you could get Adam Henrique to be your second line center. And then you move Domi down, and then you move McMahon down, or whatever.
But does that? But does that then put Kampf on the wing? And then does that mean you have? But that mean you have Max Domi as your fourth line center? No, you can't do. Yeah, you can't give Max
too much.
You can't give Max Domi defensive zone starts.
No,
you just can't. So, and that's what a fourth line is all about.
Yeah, you can't.
So I think they need like a good sort of checking winger that is an upgrade over Noah Gregor, who has been fine. But
that's an injury replacement, on a contender.
But yes, but these last 20 games, man, like, or at least these last like 25 games for Gregor have been really bad.
Yeah, I take that back. I don't think Henrique, although
I'm saying like Nick. Okay. In any other world, they would go and get like a Nick Dowd, but apparently Nick Dowd is worth a first round pick.
That's
at this point.
Actually,
hey man, insane. Sean Monahan got a first round pick. Like, who knows? But I think like
if you could get Scott Laughton for less than a first round pick, that's the guy. Because then Kampf does go to the wing and Scott Laughton's your fourth line.
Yeah.
Center.
But also I think that like Laughton can play the wing too. You kind of mix and match.
He
depending
can also go
on.
Up and down the lineup.
What handedness is Laughton?
He's right handed.
Yeah. And Kampf is left. So you can kind of basically just swap him out on different draws. Like,
and
different
objectively,
side draws.
Laughton is a much better hockey player.
Yes. Now, Scott Laughton is going like they've placed. That's the thing is depth centers. We're in a weird part of the market where we don't know with the trade market, where a lot of teams think that they're still in it. So we don't have a ton of clear buyers. We're also like a little over a week away, like 2 weeks away, basically from the trade deadline. We are 2 weeks away, basically today. It's weird. And so we don't have a clear list of sellers at this point. Like, we know that there's certain teams. We know the Flames are likely going to sell, but likely, we don't even know for sure. Like, they did with Lindholm, but we don't know if they're going to try and re-sign Hanifin or not. Or
he said he doesn't want to be there, so yeah. He's out.
So they'll trade him, which means we'll force him to sell. But, like, the Blues are thinking about it. Like, the Coyotes are likely going to be one of those teams because they have guys. They have, like, the Zuckers and the Dumbas and the Kerfoots and guys on one-year deals. But maybe, like, other than that, what, the Habs? The Wild keep waffling between whether or not they're going to sell. Like, we don't have a huge list, which then completely jacks up the price of the Sean Monahans, of the Nick Dowds, you know, of these guys that otherwise wouldn't cost that much. But because the list of players that are actually tangibly available is so limited, that guys like Nick Dowd are commanding first round picks, which is crazy. If your GM pays, I know that Nick Dowd is a great defensive center.
But if your GM pays a first round pick for Nick Dowd,
you should euthanize that GM. Like, it's crazy.
No, you should lose your job.
In a perfect world, the Leafs would trade like a third and a fifth or a third and Alex Steeves or something for Nick Dowd. It would be seen as a bit of an overpay at the time, but he would fit that fourth line perfectly. And then
I'd be fine with that.
With a third and like Alex Steeves for Nick Dowd.
Yeah. Okay, great. I think I'd
you
be
do
fine
that,
that,
like, or you know, insert
similar to, like,
or Roni Hirvonen, insert whoever at this point. Like, but it's tough because these are the guys at the top of the market.
Yeah,
unless other guys,
great.
Unless a bunch of teams in the next, you know, 13 days decide, okay, we're not making it, so let's just fire sale it. Like, unless the Blues doing Rangers where they're like, we're probably not going to make it. All right, Pavel Buchnevich, you're on the market. Then teams are going to, like, give up two firsts for that guy. But other than that,
which would also be crazy, but
yeah. Anyway, let's go into our deep dive presented by Cantorque. Cantorque makes rugged, hardworking industrial tools for heavy equipment operators around the world. They are proudly Canadian and manufacture everything out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada for heavy industry around the world. Their new website tells their story 20 years in the making. Visit Cantorque.com today and ask Colin for more details. Now, Rachel, our deep dive today is on a team that is a team that probably should be selling, but we don't know if they're selling. Another quasi do we sell, don't we sell team in the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, the Sens have been
interesting.
I would say, yeah,
noteworthy.
They've been, there's pre-Shane Pinto and post-Shane Pinto.
There sure is.
And that's crazy. I've watched probably more Sens games than are good for my health this season. I've watched almost every game. I think I've missed one game since Shane Pinto's return, just because I find them very interesting to watch.
Also, you want to see if another, if you, a fellow degenerate gambler, wants to support your fellow degenerate gamblers.
Can I make an admission?
Sure.
So he's got 10 points in 13 games. I've bet on him to get a point in every game.
The
because
irony.
I'm just like, I have to.
The absolute irony that this guy gets suspended 41 games for betting, not really on hockey, apparently. And meanwhile, he has a helmet decal for Bet99, and people are making a ton of money for betting on him after he comes back from his betting suspension.
Also,
world do we live in?
I like Claire Hanna pointing out.
Yeah, so Claire Hanna pointing out that basically the league gave a like 15-page detailed syllabus detailing everything that went into the Morgan Riley suspension. And meanwhile, Shane Pinto got suspended 41 games, and we don't really know what for. They just said gambling, and that's it.
Good on Claire for pointing that out.
Very good on Claire for pointing that out.
Okay, so let's talk about this. So I went through, I've actually spoken to people around the organization, people that are familiar with sort of how the Sens were playing pre Jacques Martin and now under Jacques Martin, got some numbers. So they haven't actually been better defensively. So when DJ left, they were like 12th or 13th, I believe, in expected goals against. They're 29th since Jacques Martin took over. So they haven't been better defensively in terms of giving stuff up. But you know what is happening? Their goalies are being a little bit better. And as we saw in Edmonton, what happens when your goalies get better?
You get better collectively. Now, when we say they're goalies, it's mainly mean goalie.
Goalie, yeah.
Because Jonas Korpisalo We said it from the moment it got signed.
It was not a good idea.
That's a crazy contract. And they have 4 more years after this one. Whoop. Of Eunice Corposalo.
Hot
crazy.
Hot tier summer.
Now good for Anton Forsberg. He's brought it back. But boy, oh boy. Not great.
They're still 32nd in the league. Like, I'm not saying that they've been.
But there's been a bit of an uptick. And what do you know? They're 8-3-2 since a certain player has come back into the fold.
Right. So just some quick stats. Their power play is 16%. That's 25th in the league. That's not going to cut it. Their PK is 74.9%. That's 28th in the league. That's also not going to cut it. Although I will say, in watching their PK, like actually from an analysis perspective, I like a lot of the things they do. Their goaltending is dog shit on the PK. Like, they cannot get a save on the PK. And so I don't want to be too critical of their actual PK systems.
What feeds into that, though? Like, does a goalie just stops being good when...
Well, no, they've had bad goaltending all true. Year. Right? So if you've given up, like, think about how many power play opportunities or penalty killing, like how many times that they gave up penalty killing at the beginning of the year. They were like 50% at one point.
Now, does their PK system give up like a disproportionate amount of one-timers that are just unsavable? Or is it just...
No, I know they're just not getting... They never got saves at the beginning of the year. Their PK has actually improved under Martin.
Yeah.
So it's up to basically 75% now, which is still bad, but like a hell of a lot better than 50%. So, okay, that's fine. Where I think... Okay, so before we get into trades and all this stuff, I think it's important to point out, and it was pointed out to me by people around the organization. If you notice, the Sens always go on a run at this time of
year.
They
do, and always.
This person said to me, do you notice that once the games don't matter, once we're out of the playoff picture,
once the lights dim,
we're fine. And it's because, like, they're looser. They don't really have, like, there's no pressure, right? And whereas, like, if you look at the Devils, for example, there's a lot of pressure on the Devils right now. So when you're playing with no pressure at all, you play looser. You're a little bit, you're not squeezing the stick as much, and that's leading to wins. So I think we need to be a little leery of just how good the Sens turnaround has been, because the reality is they haven't been as good defensively. The only system change that I can see, and I've got it somewhat confirmed, is that they changed their neutral zone forecheck. So now they're a 1-2-2 instead of a 1-1-3. Mm. But none of their defensive system has changed. It's just they've gotten better goaltending. And they're winning games. The one big thing I've noticed.
Yeah.
From a change perspective is that Shabbat and Chychrun don't play together anymore. And that's a good thing because they were getting caved in. Like, awful.
The downfall of Thomas Shabbat is a very interesting case study, because he has not looked like the franchise defenseman that they pegged him to be and then paid him to be. And like, he is
that $8 million contract at one point, we were like, wow, that's a good deal.
We thought that was like a steal. And now you're like, holy smokes, Thomas Shabbat, $8 million for another, like, what, 5-6 years?
Like, remember Sens fans getting all over Leafs fans who were like, see, like, Thomas Shabbat, Morgan Riley, da da da. You cannot tell me you would rather have Thomas Shabbat. You just can't.
I just remember the core conversations, like, where it's just like, you know, you bring Norris, Batherson, Stützle, and, you know, all together, and they're making like 30 million, whereas you got like the core four in Toronto making 40. Ha 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 ha.
Okay.
Where are we now, friends?
Right. Folks? So I think Shabbat and Chychrun clearly play better when they're apart.
Yeah, which is great.
Sanderson has some spatial awareness issues. He's also extremely young and still learning the league. So I think he's going to be a fantastic defenseman in this league. I have zero doubt about it.
Great.
So he's still learning.
Good thing you signed him. It's a good thing he's making $8 million a year now. That's good.
So I look at this and I go,
could you have maybe bridged him for a bit and then help the team in the immediacy when you have all these guys on their ELCs or just starting their extensions? Maybe. But no, you had to lock him up to over $8 million before he really had a full season under his belt, and then also get on all over these fans for saying that it might not have been the greatest bet. No, you're fine.
Okay, so Shabbat and Chychrun playing together, DJ loved to play them together.
Mm-hmm.
Bad idea, don't do it. When they don't play together, the Sens are much more successful. Their PDO was so bad It was like 93% together. Their save percentage on ice together was less than 870. And yes, the goaltending, like we said, hasn't been very good. But below 870?
That's really bad.
That means you're giving up some pretty high-end scoring chances. So part of this is they're playing loose. The other part of this, and I tweeted about it, was Shane Pinto's return gives them depth up the middle of Tim Stützle, Shane Pinto, and Josh Norris. And the difference between having two lines that can score and three lines that can score in the National Hockey League is absolutely enormous. Because the way you plot to defend against two lines versus three lines is completely different.
Yeah, you're right. Like, and listen, like Pinto just in of itself has played really, really well.
Oh, he's been one of their best players.
He's had half a season off. Like he doesn't have the half a season. And look, we know that that can go very, very poorly for some players. Namely, you know, like William Nylander, when he came back after signing with 5 seconds to spare on the December 1st deadline, he just was a shell of himself for the rest of the season because you lose that step. You lose the training camp and just the motions. But it really does seem like Shane Pinto really did benefit from maybe taking a bit of a break, maybe focusing on different aspects of his conditioning, maybe doing some skill sessions, maybe, I don't know. Focusing on himself, going to Cabo, you know, maybe, doing some stuff, just great. Like that does not involve
taking
gambling.
Some personal time.
That does not involve gambling. So yeah.
I think he's going to be a key piece of, I'm sure he will be. Forward, but the difference between two scoring lines and three scoring lines in the National Hockey League is enormous. And I genuinely think that for a lot of teams, that's the difference between playoffs and not.
Well, yeah, because the majority of teams in the NHL don't have three scoring lines. They only have two. So if you have three, that's a matchup nightmare right there.
Oh, it's a complete matchup nightmare.
And that's the edge, usually, that other teams take. It's right. Great.
So I think part of this needs to be taken with a major grain of salt because the Sens, this is not the first time they've done this. They've done this, I believe, the last 2 years in a row.
Yep.
Where they get out of it and then they start playing well leading up to trade deadline, and it's because the games don't matter anymore. And sure, they're playing well and Shane Pinto's back, and if they can carry that into next season and
great.
They start the year, then you know what we said, some belief.
But that's what we said last year. They were playing well towards the end of the season, and we thought, well, now it's the summer. Pierre, he locked everyone up. He got Tarasenko as like a complimentary.
Yeah, you picked them to make the playoffs and gave me shit.
I did.
For not.
I did, and you know what? I take full responsibility for it. I believed in the Sens.
Johnny Lazarus bet his life on it.
So get ready to learn, dead buddy. Like, but like I also. I put them as the second wild card. Like I was like, they'll squeak in, but I believe in them. I think that they have some potential. You look at them on paper, they do, but it really doesn't seem. And what's funny is that Daniel Alfredson really called them out on this. And so did Jacques Martin. Jacques Martin, it was reported in a piece I remember reading, that Jacques Martin kind of took the core together and sat them down after their first 5-6 games. And it's basically like, listen, you guys are all really talented,
but this isn't good enough.
Yeah, you're all really talented. You all have a lot of potential, but you are not going to win if you play this way. Like if you continue to do what you're doing, you are never going to win. And I think when a guy like Jacques Martin says that to you as a young guy in the league, no matter how much money you're making, that holds some weight. And I think that now maybe this is the year they actually do carry that positive momentum in.
Can't wait for Mike to predict that the Sens are going to finish like third in the division next year.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to, and barring them making a crazy signing. But like, I'm not going to, because I think that the Sens operate best when everyone's counting them out. Like when, remember the years that they were, they, I remember back during our childhood, the years that they, that, you know, the Daniel Alfredson, Jason Spezza, Danny Heatley lines and all that, the years where they were finishing first in the league, getting presence trophies, they would get swept in the first, or get bounced the first round by the Leafs.
I have, sitting in my office over there, I have the stick that Ray Emery used.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Against the Buffalo Sabres in the double overtime game. It was like the Eastern Conference Finals.
But those teams, a lot of them, they made the Cup Final once in 2000.
It was that year. I want to say seven.
Is that six? Seven against the Ducks, right? Yeah. But other than that, man, like those, I feel like the Sens just inherently as a team do better. And you pointed out just by saying that once the spotlight is off them, they go on these runs. Once the pressure's off, they go on these runs. So I'm not going to pick them to do anything next year.
we're going to put a giant asterisk beside them.
And well, I'm just going to say I don't believe in them. And then people will count them out. And I feel that the Ottawa Senators do best when people are counting them out. The Andrew Hammond run, you know, just
any, Curtis Lazar.
Curtis Lazar. Yeah. Anytime these guys think about when they made the conference, when they were one double overtime away from the from the Stanley Cup final in 2015, I believe.
Yeah. Boy, how do they latch onto that, though?
They did, but and that was kind of the downfall of their entire team, because that whole team basically evaporated the next season. But like, they were not expected to go that far. It was blowing people's minds, and yet here they were. So I think they thrive when they're counted out.
Yep.
Now the question here, though, Rachel, is they're playing some good hockey now, obviously. They're well out of the playoff picture. They're all but mathematically eliminated. Like,
you have to win your last 25 games.
Yeah. Like, they're basically done. And we think, okay, do they sell? Because you look at this team on paper, they have a lot of guys who, even though they're not successful, this is a team with a lot of guys who you go, man, that's a good player. I wouldn't want to give up him.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, I saw Laleem's Martian.
Yeah.
Talk about Josh Norris. And I think you made a really good point in that you're making the money you're making. You need to produce.
Yeah.
And last night he scored 2 goals, and that's great.
Great.
But at the same time, like, 2 goals in however many games, like, that's just not acceptable. So I think there needs to be some level of change.
So who do you change?
Well, should we go through some trade proposals?
Let's do it. Well, I think even before we go through trade proposals from Cap Friendly, where we try and make crazy...
And one from Twitter that actually broke my brain.
Where we try and talk ourselves into, or at least modify, crazy trade proposals. But I think before that, you look at this roster right now, like, who would you send out the door? Let's say you're holding a Kyle Dubas-esque press conference where you go, are you open for business, and who are you open for business for?
I think I'd look at Norris, Batherson, Chychrun.
Chychrun, eh?
Yeah. Because I think he gets you assets. That's what I think he gets you legit assets.
Does he get you more now than you paid to get him?
Potentially.
Do you think so? Because they gave up a decent chunk of stuff. Not as much as it was expected to, right, obviously. But they gave up a first rounder and some prospects.
I think you at least explore what's out there.
Yes.
I'm not saying you must trade him. But I think you have to have the conversation. If I truly, I look at the Sens and there's 2 to 3 untouchable guys.
So it's Tkachuk, Stützle, and
Sanderson.
You think Sanderson's untouchable?
Well, like, unless you're getting, like, a major return. Because the reality of the situation is, there's probably 3 untouchables in the entire league, and it's McDavid, Matthews, and McKinnon. Like, in terms of, like...
You think McCarr's not untouchable?
Do you think that if the Edmonton Oilers called and said, we'll trade you Connor McDavid for Cale Makar, that they would say no? Probably not.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, so it's like, okay, in that scenario,
there's not a trade to be made. Like, Nikita Kucherov is not untouchable. They almost traded him for Dreisaitl a couple years ago.
Which is nuts to think about.
That's crazy. But what I'm saying is,
what
like,
a what
truly,
if.
Truly untouchable, right? But at the same time, you don't want to give up guys for less than they're worth. So unless I'm getting an absolute, like, haul.
Justin Hall?
No.
Okay.
An absolute, like, Brinks truck for Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle, Jake Sanderson, even Shane Pinto, like, because he's so young and there's a lot there. I don't think I would, like, I'm certainly not calling around and being like, are you interested in Brady Tkachuk? That's what I'm saying. Whereas I could see them calling around and being like, we might be willing to move Josh Norris or Drake Batherson. You kind of know what I'm saying? Like, you're not advertising, but if someone calls you and knocks your socks off, you're gonna think about it, I guess, is kind of what I'm getting at. I don't think they should trade Stützle. I don't think they should trade Tkachuk. I don't think they should trade Pinto. At this point, they're probably not trading Ridley Gregg either. I don't think they should trade Sanderson. So you're kind of at 5, unless you're getting a massive overpayment.
Yeah. Do you think they don't even look into a guy like Artem Zub?
Artem Zub, yeah. Like, I would... I would look to move him.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, like, who on this roster do you think, like, I think
everybody outside of those guys,
Matthew Joseph, I think could get you some, but I mean, like, realistic stuff. Like, I think they have trade chips, and like, if they want to go that route,
Tarasenko can get you something.
Tarasenko can get you stuff. We're going to get into that.
They're not going to trade Claude Giroux.
No, but I think
that
we have Matt, but Matthew Joseph could get you some stuff, I think, as well. Would be great if the Leafs could pay like a third and Alex Steeves for that guy and put him on the fourth line.
But I think, yeah, like Drake Batherson can get you something.
Oh, absolutely.
Josh Norris will get you something.
I don't think Josh Norris... Okay, one question I have for you. Do you believe that Josh Norris is the 35-goal scorer that he was that got him this contract?
No.
Okay, then you trade him right now because you paid him to be a 35-goal scorer and he
was... He's at the valley of his value.
Like, I don't think he's at the value. Trade. I don't think he'll ever get higher. Like, it's... I think Josh Norris is at least... We're at least talking about him as, like... a good sort of player right now.
I think he makes it's fair $7 million. He's a 25 goal scorer. I think that's where he is. He's 25. Like 25 goal scorer.
So that's too much money. And yeah, so I think so I think right now he still has that sheen on him because every step you take away from that 35 every season, every day that you go away from that 35 goal season, his you're getting less and less for him. I think you deal him now.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think there are other guys, like Shabbat's contract is an albatross right now. It's a problem.
It's so, Darnell Nurse territory, yes, you know?
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Jacob Chychrun gets you
assets. Yes. But then again, like, do you want to trade that guy or do you want to build around him?
Does he want to stay in Ottawa?
I think, well,
if he does, I think you can.
Yeah, he dispelled the rumors that he was sick of Ottawa. Like he's from that area.
What I'm saying is
he's also got another year after this.
Right. But you have a conversation with him in the summer. If you're not willing to extend in the summer,
then you start looking at
it. Then you're trading him.
But you're not dealing him at the deadline.
No. You're trading him in the summer. But I think you have to start looking at changes. And those changes should be guys like Norris, Batherson. I think Tarasenko's as good as gone.
Oh, well, yeah. He's the perfect trade chip
right now. Artem Zub, personally.
Yeah, he's got a lot of term left. Like, Zub has got 3 more years after this one.
Yeah, like, I think he would have value as a bottom-pairing defenseman on another team that needs sort of a puck-moving defenseman. And
he makes 4.6. He's...
If he can be...
And he's 28.
If he could be a 4... Right, he's in the prime of his career, technically.
Yeah.
Right? If he could be a 4, I think you could get some assets for him. The thing with Jacob Chychrun is that's probably the guy you get the most for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he probably gets you more than Drake Batherson. Right? You're not trading Claude Giroux. Like, that's just not happening.
Why not?
I'm pretty sure he has an NMC.
Like, he does. Yeah.
So he's not going anywhere.
He doesn't want, you don't think he would want to go anywhere?
No, he's from Ottawa. He said he wants to finish his career there. So he's not going anywhere.
Right. Well, we're going to have to put that sort of logic out the window in some of these trade proposals that we have.
Well, because most of these proposals don't even consider the trade clauses, which to me, like, right away, that's ridiculous to think.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. And so, I think the Sens need to consider trading some of their pieces. Honestly, I think you could get a murderer's row if you traded Ridley Craig right now because teams want that kind of shithead.
And he's under contract for another year and he will retain his RFA status. He's under contract for another year at like 8.63 or something.
Yeah.
Like, so that's really good.
But I don't think they're going to trade him.
Yeah. Well,
but they need to do something. They can't do nothing because, yes, you have a core of young players, and I don't like making this comparison because they're going to get mad. But the Leafs core made the playoffs the first year after Matthews was drafted. They still haven't made the playoffs.
Yes, and they pushed the President's Trophy winning. They lost every game by 1 goal, and I believe it was 5 of the 6 games went to overtime.
Right. So, like, you have had enough time to show as a core that you're good enough to contend.
Prove it.
And you haven't done that.
I think a thing...
So you're out.
And one thing that I think really cut their legs out from under them is... A, that Alex DeBrincat wanted to leave.
Yep.
And also B, how little they got for him. That's you're sort of a slave to the market at that point. I get it. But that trade return for Alex DeBrincat was like a conditional first, Dominic Kubalik, and like a 4th or something. Not good enough. And that really, like, you took a guy who, yes, like, didn't.
Nick Dowd might get more.
Exactly. Oh, I'll kill myself if Nick Dowd gets more. But it's just, I can't imagine.
And I feel how, bad, yeah, because the Sens fans have taken so much.
I don't feel bad for Sens fans.
Crap. No, I'm not talking about the ones on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about, you mean like real people? Regular, real average people.
Average, like, sane, mentally normal people.
Like, okay, my uncle, yeah, who doesn't have any social media, okay, good, at all, good, that has been a Sens fan. Yeah. And he was a Sens fan because everyone in our family's Leafs fans. And he just wanted to be, mm-hmm, like, screw it, I'm going to go the other direction.
Yeah.
Right? I feel bad for those people because it's like they go to games and they're like, they follow the team. They're not being dummies on Twitter. They just want their team to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people I feel bad for. The dummies on Twitter, I don't feel bad for any of you. Like, I find you to be highly annoying in the same way that I find 99% of Leafs Twitter to be highly annoying. I think 99.999% of Canucks Twitter is filled with absolute garbage. Mm-hmm. And, like, I look at this and I go, I feel bad for the people that actually pay for tickets and are going to games and have been following this team for such a long time, and they just want their team to be good. Those are the people I feel bad for. And I think that this management group and this ownership group owes them some signal that they're willing to trade guys out, even if it's hard. Masai Ujiri traded out DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. Now, that was a special set of circumstances.
No, but what I'm saying is if DeMar DeRozan, who's the franchise player, can be traded out, you can be traded out because they didn't have playoff. The Raptors did not have playoff success. And then Masai Ujiri made the really emotional decision to trade DeRozan. He was beloved.
Yeah, he's going to get a statue.
Absolutely beloved. And yeah, he made the decision to trade him. And what did that lead to? It led to playoff success. I think Ottawa's in a spot now where they have players who are beloved by the fan base. But if the fan base has to choose between I love this player and I win three playoff rounds.
Well, who do you think that player is then?
I think it's a couple of players.
Tell me who they are.
I think pretty much everyone outside of Stützle and Tkachuk. And even then, if I can get a superstar, I consider Stützle. Tkachuk is a bit of a unicorn. He's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you can't sit here and tell me that if you got offered a superstar in this league that you wouldn't consider it. If you got offered Jack Hughes, like if Tom Fitzgerald bumped his head and decided he was going to trade like Nico Hischier or Jack Hughes, of course you would consider that.
I wouldn't consider it for Nico Hischier.
Stützle?
Like,
if the package included Nico Hischier, yeah, you absolutely would.
Just straight up?
No. Package.
Oh, like, what, like, Hischier and, like, a first or something? Or?
No, that would be way too much.
Yeah.
First.
But, like, a first and, like,
100 points in this league.
No, I know.
Nico's going to win a Selke.
Yeah.
Multiple, actually, probably. We'll see. But I'm just using it as an, like, if Tom Fitzgerald completely bumped his head and was like, I'm willing to trade Jack Hughes. Yeah, you would make that trade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying, is, like, if you have the opportunity to significantly improve your team, even if it involves getting rid of a player who's absolutely beloved, you have to consider it.
Rachel, though. So if Tom Fitzgerald were to trade Jack Hughes, what, like,
he's not trading Jack Hughes.
How
it's
would,
just like,
I know, but how would his fake Instagram girlfriend react to that? How would she be able to cope?
The fact that this is not even the first time that this has happened to a Devil Star player. I was employed by the team the last time that this happened.
How would the girl that lied to all her friends that she was dating Jack Hughes, how would she be able to cope with that? It'd be crazy. All right, let's do some trades.
Yeah, we're an hour into this podcast, so
let's do some trade reactions. Let's do it. So I plumb the depths of Cap Friendly to find some of their trade machine to find some hypothetical trades that get sort of tossed out there. And
we're going to fly through the first three because yes, the last one is the most insane one.
And we try and sort of talk ourselves into them. Let's start with trade number one, which is Ottawa gets a 2024. Now, to be fair, there weren't a ton of Sens trades. Like, that's why the ones that I found aren't that crazy.
Right.
Is that, like, they're really
reasonable.
Well, I'm just saying that in terms of actual volume, there really weren't a ton of Sens trades.
Okay.
Like, so I kind of had to pick what I got. Beggars can't be choosers, I guess. So Ottawa, in this trade number one proposal, gets a 2024 second rounder, which is Edmonton's, and a 2024 third rounder, which is Edmonton's. And Edmonton gets Vladimir Tarasenko at 50% retained. This, by the way, was approved by the Central Registry, so it works cap-wise. The corresponding move is they send Dylan Holloway down.
Oh, I think that's a bad idea then.
Okay. Well, then...
No, I think the trade works.
You think the trade works? Well, they can... Then maybe they send someone else down. Adam Ernie or whatever.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. If Dylan Holloway
In the thing, it says, like, corresponding move to make it work, and it says send Dylan Holloway down. I was like,
that's not happening.
I don't know about that. But, yeah, anyway.
Okay, I think that's decent. That's decently fair value.
A second and a third for 50% retained. I
would probably retained. Go a second and a fourth, maybe a fifth.
For 50% retained, though?
That's where the retention situation comes in. Like, I think
this is fair based on the fact that you're eating half fair that. Trade. Yeah. I think that's good. Like, that
I'm
works.
I'm not sure if it fits.
It does.
No. Like, I'm not sure if Tarasenko fits in Edmonton is what I'm saying. But I think it's a fair value trade. Like, I actually
think... They need another top six winger in Edmonton. They've been talking about it. They need a top six forward.
I'm not sure Tarasenko's the guy they're looking for. They need speed. He's not speed.
Yeah, that's true.
He's the opposite of Lightning McQueen.
Yeah. All right. So now we have this trade, which...
LOL.
I did not... Like I said, beggars can't...
This is the opposite of the last trade. Like this I said, zero sense.
Beggars can't be choosers when it comes to which trade, when you don't have a ton of Ottawa Senators trades to go with. But in this one, Florida gets Claude Giroux, Vladimir Tarasenko, and Eric Brandstrom, just straight up.
Okay.
And Ottawa gets Sam Reinhart. And this is sort of they call it a sign-in trade. So I'm assuming it's Sam Reinhart with an extension. Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Eetu Luostarinen. How can we talk ourselves into this one, Rachel?
So we're not, for a couple of reasons. Claude Giroux has an NMZ.
Yeah. No, but okay, let's take that out of the equation. Like, let's just say this is just pure...
I don't think the Sens want to trade Claude Giroux because I think they think he's a really important part of their dressing room.
Oh, yeah, he's really spurred them to playoff success so far.
No, but in terms of, like, helping the young players understand what it takes to be a professional...
They've definitely learned that.
Everyone I've spoke to in Philadelphia, in Ottawa, says, like, this guy has had a positive impact in terms of getting the guys to understand what it takes to play in the National Hockey League. And Ottawa does have a ton of pretty young players.
Yeah.
So having a guy like Claude Giroux, who's been a captain in the NHL, I do think is important. But where it goes super sideways for me is the Sam Reinhart situation. You're trading, like, a second line guy who's old, a third line guy...
Who's old.
Who's old, and a guy who is not good on defense for a guy who's second in the league in goals.
He's got 36, I believe.
Like, that's just not going to cut it.
And you're getting an extension involved as well.
It's not going to cut it.
So it's just not.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson's actually been pretty good for Florida this year.
And Luostarinen.
He's young. Good bottom six player.
Yeah, he's young. He's got a good contract. Like, but this is just the value. Like,
even what if would I do you, this, okay.
What would you add to it?
No. It's 3-for-3. Reinhart is better than Giroux.
Yeah.
OEL is better than Brandstrom.
Yeah.
And I think Luostarinen and Tarasenko are about the same.
Really?
Yeah.
At this point. Okay. Wow.
Tarasenko's a bit better, but not as much as Reinhart is better than Giroux.
So let's say this is the framework. What would Ottawa need to add to this to make it work, to make it line up?
Literally Drake Batherson. Like, I think if you did Batherson, Tarasenko, and Zub, you might have something. The reality is Florida's re-signing Reinhart, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right, trade number three, and this is the one that brings Eric Karlsson home
to Ottawa.
Elliot Friedman, there's no sort of rumor basis of this. Elliot Friedman just mentioned in 32 Thoughts that he would like to see that happen. And
I think Eric Karlsson would like to see that happen.
Yeah, and Friedman doesn't put stuff in 32 Thoughts if he doesn't think that there's at least some sort of chance that it could maybe happen one day. But this one is Pittsburgh gets Jacob Chychrun, Eric Brandstrom, and a 2024 second rounder from Ottawa. In exchange, Ottawa gets Eric Karlsson at 25% retained, which is about $7.5 million AAV.
Didn't San Jose retain on Karlsson as well?
Yes.
So now you're retaining on the next portion of the contract.
Karlsson has... Like, he was making, 12.5. San Jose retained, 25 or something. So he went down to 10.5. And then this...
If you retain another 25, you're about 7.
Yes, so you're at 7.5, yeah.
Okay. I actually don't mind Karlsson at 7.5.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Karlsson for the same amount of money as Morgan
Jacob
Riley.
Jacob Chychrun helps them get younger.
Jacob Chikrin would be amazing on the Pens.
Oh, he would be very helpful. Yep.
Branstrom would be an interesting addition to add back there.
And the second makes, I think, Ottawa probably, you know what?
This could work.
This is a scenario where if it's Chikrin, Branstrom, and like a good prospect, I don't hate it on either side because it helps Pittsburgh get younger. Let's just say, I don't think it makes sense for Ottawa to acquire Carlson in the scheme of like where they are in their timeline. But from a nostalgia perspective, I'm going to go with it.
You want to see Erik Karlsson wearing the
Sens uniform,
the old school proper Sens uniform.
Right. So let's say that Ottawa decides this makes sense. Let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Carlson for Chikrin, Branstrom, and a prospect.
Who, like, can you name one off the top of your head?
Tyler Cleven, maybe? Or a second round pick. Like, yeah, maybe that second round pick. I think you could do something here. I think Ottawa's got to add. Because Branstrom is an AHL player.
Damn.
And so,
damn.
If you're getting them to retain money, you're going to have to give them more than Chikrin in a second. Yeah. Because the reality of the situation is Erik Karlsson is a better defenseman than Jacob Chikrin.
Mm. All right.
But it helps Pittsburgh get younger.
Yep.
And it brings Karlsson back. So I kind of want to see it happen.
Be great. All right. Our final one. This is the big one. This is a three-way trade. These are always fun to explain and also fun to go through. So you found this on Twitter. Interesting.
It broke my, like, it actually turned my brain into scrambled eggs.
So Ottawa gets Noah Hanifin, Eric Cernak, Calvin DeHaan, and Isaac Howard.
So they get two top four defensemen, a bottom pairing defenseman, and a top prospect, like a first round pick prospect. Yeah. Okay.
Calgary gets Jacob Chikrin and a 2025 third from Tampa. And Tampa Bay gets Thomas Chabot, Eric Branstrom. People just love to trade Branstrom. It's crazy. And Vladimir Tarasenko.
Now, I ran this. Tarasenko would have to be 50% retained for this to be compliant. Okay.
No.
No. From Calgary.
From everyone but Ottawa.
Okay, so.
Says no to this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because Ottawa's getting two top four defensemen, a bottom pair good veteran defenseman with good numbers, and then a top prospect.
And all their trade, well.
And all Ottawa gave up was Chabot, Branstrom, and Tarasenko. So, oh, no, they gave up a bunch.
No, but Shabbat's on a bad contract. Yeah. You're going to have to pay somebody to take Chabot.
You think he's reached that level? Yes. Wow.
Unless you're retaining on Chabot. Which I don't think you can because there's contract retention slots. So if you retain on Chabot, maybe, but I'm not sure you want to do that. You're not getting two top pair defensemen for Jacob Chikrin and Thomas Chabot. That is not happening.
Wow.
You're not getting a top prospect for Isaac Howard or for Vladimir Tarasenko. That's also not happening. Like, none of that makes sense from any perspective. Also, Thomas Chabot doesn't fit on Tampa Bay because they have Victor Hedman and Mikhail Sergachev. Where is he? Like, well, offensive defensemen.
Mikhail Sergachev is in the process of getting a bionic leg right now. So they don't really have Mikhail Sergachev right now.
The only reason Thomas Chabot has any value right now is because he plays on the power play. Yeah. He's not playing ahead of Victor Hedman.
That's true. Yeah.
So you're getting, even if we swap this out, Noah Hanifin is or is not better than Jacob Chikrin. I think they're probably about even. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's better, Thomas Chabot or Eric Cernak?
I would take Cernak.
Okay.
Yeah.
Calvin DeHaan or Eric Branstrom?
Calvin DeHaan.
Okay. Who's Tarasenko, Isaac Howard? Does that make any sense to you?
I would take the top prospect over the guy who.
Okay. So this is
like a 50-point player.
Every single.
So how do we make it work?
Okay. How do we make this work? I think you're probably sending Drake Batherson to Calgary.
Yes.
So if Calgary gets Chikrin and Batherson
and a third,
no, because Tampa doesn't get anything from Ottawa, so it doesn't make sense. Or Tampa doesn't get anything from Calgary, so it would be a trade between Ottawa and Calgary. First of all, Noah Hanifin doesn't want to play in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this is completely out the window because you're not trading for a rental. So you can't make it work. Now, I think there could be a scenario where if you wanted to trade for Rasmus Anderson, if Batherson was going the other way, or if Chychrun was going the other way, I think there could be something there. Because I think Anderson's a little bit better than Shabbat and probably Chychrun. So if you were...
You think Anderson's better than Chychrun?
A little bit.
Okay. I don't agree with that.
He's better offensively, for sure. But he's not better defensively. So it's just a matter of like what Calgary would want.
All right. Well, that brings us into the show. Make sure you subscribe to YouTube, to any podcatcher that's out there, to Twitch. We did 2 Arkham streams this week. It was great. We had some awesome turnout, some great conversations. It's just a great place to vibe. Subscribe to, like I said, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all that. We're going to have Mike's Meals for One. It's going to be great. Homemade fried chicken sandwiches. I'm going to teach you how to do that. Which is going to be great. And make sure to donate to Jumpstart, our charity of choice. Jumpstart helps economically disadvantaged children play team sports, which is a cause that is extremely near and dear to both Rachel and I's hearts. So make sure to donate to Jumpstart. Our link is in the description. And until Monday, stay safe.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.